The e-cigarette company Juul has agreed to pay over $400 million in a settlement after an investigation into the impact its marketing had on teenage vaping. The money will be divided between 33 states, including Wisconsin, which is expected to receive $14.4 million from the settlement. Teenagers use e-cigarettes at higher rates than adults, according to the University of Wisconsin's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, with around 11.3% of teenagers using the products. The Centers for Disease Control says most e-cigarettes contain harmful and addictive substances, including nicotine, and that they're unsafe for kids, teens, and young adults. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you used e-cigarettes? Have you seen teens in your community, maybe in your school, maybe your own family, start vaping at an earlier than legal age? Do you have questions about vaping, how it's marketed, how it affects health? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Douglas Jornby is the Director of Clinical Services for UW's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He's also a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the UW-Madison Medical School. Dr. Jornby, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here. Thanks for asking me back.
And Thomas Carr is the Director of National Policy at the American Lung Association. Thomas, thanks for being with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having us on.
Thomas, let's start with you. Tell us about this two-year investigation into Juul's marketing. What were states worried about here?
Well, so state attorney generals have been engaged in a two-year bipartisan investigation into Juul's sales and marketing practices that directly led to the settlement you mentioned earlier with Juul by Wisconsin and other states. The investigation helped to confirm and document Juul's marketing practices that targeted underage youth. Their manipulation of the chemical composition of their products to make them more addictive and palatable to inexperienced users, and their misleading of consumers about the nicotine content in their products and the addictiveness of them as well, too. The Lung Association certainly commends the state attorney generals for undertaking this investigation and the settlement that resulted.
Thomas, what were some of the specific marketing practices from Juul? What a big player in e-cigarettes. What were some of the specific marketing practices that people looked at and said, yeah, that's clearly targeting teens?
They engaged in a few, and it was kind of at the beginning when they were trying to gain market share. A few examples of those are launch parties and events. They had a novel use of social media influencers. We hadn't really seen before of the same age or older than youth. And then there were free samples that they gave out pretty religiously as well too. They also used the design of the product as well too as a marketing point. And the fact it was easily concealable. So my kids could use it in a concealed way in schools and other locations where they normally wouldn't be able to use it.
Dr. Jornby, let's turn to the teen vaping crisis. How quickly did vaping rise among teens after these marketing practices started?
Really dramatically. It looks from what we're seeing now as though it may have peaked in 2019, but it's hard to make too much of the data that we have from 2020 because there's so many other factors going on. But I think it's important to realize that among young adults, vaping was happening at four times the rate of traditional cigarette smoking. So it's tremendously more popular among young adults than old school cigarettes.
And I've talked to you and your colleagues in the past. We had these what seemed like years of good news where traditional nicotine products, tobacco in particular, the use had been going down among teens. And then we have this explosion of nicotine use among teens. This reversed a lot of our addiction progress over the years, right?
It did in terms of looking at, you know, actual use of nicotine. And we know, especially with younger people, like before the age of 16, using nicotine from any source can trigger a genetic variant that causes long-lasting vulnerability. So it's harder for them to quit. They have more severe withdrawal symptoms. But I think it's also important to note that given what we've learned over the last more than half a decade, that the risk of smoking traditional cigarettes is far and beyond anything we've seen with vaping products. So still some progress, but yeah, you're absolutely right. The switch from traditional cigarettes to vaping products was really fast and really large in magnitude.
Thomas, this settlement includes restrictions on some of those marketing practices that might target teens you mentioned. As I understand it, they'd already stopped doing a lot of that even before this settlement came out. Have you seen a change in focus from Juul and other players in the market when it comes to marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did stop many of these sales and marketing practices that are banned under the agreement. And that was partly due to public outcry and FDA pressure. But I will say that it is useful that they're legally enforceable under this agreement, and so that does make a difference and could mean that Juul or even other products would not use these tactics again.
We're talking about vaping and teens and marketing. A new settlement from the company Juul gives money to states that had challenged their marketing, especially when it concerned teenagers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing lots of vaping among kids in your community, maybe in your school? Have you run into this in your own family, your own classroom, if you're a teacher or a student? 800-642-1234 is the number to call with your experiences, your thoughts, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Want to listen to kind of a public service announcement here posted on UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention website about a teenager who became addicted to vaping.
My anxiety got really bad after I started vaping, and I was never an anxious person before. I started having panic attacks. I couldn't really breathe, like my heart was beating so fast. At first, I didn't think it was like addictive. I thought I was kind of stronger than it, but soon I realized like it was holding kind of a power over me. I was always craving more and more, like it was never enough.
Dr. Jorenby, we heard some of the effects on at least one person there. You mentioned vaping not as unhealthy as, you know, smoking cigarettes, but there are effects. Can you talk about the consequences, especially on teens?
Yeah, the biggest thing, and I think the most significant public health concern, is that there is evidence that young people in particular who start vaping, who get exposed to nicotine, who have never smoked cigarettes, are several times more likely to then go on and start smoking traditional cigarettes, which brings in everything that we know about the long-term effects on, you know, the pulmonary system, the cardiovascular system, the cancer risk, all the things that have been documented since the early 1960s. Certainly, you know, in terms of young people using that as a way to cope, and as Mr. Carr was saying earlier, you know, one of the things in the investigation that came through loud and clear was that at least in the past, Juul's marketing had not been completely honest in terms of the packaging, not making it clear that the Juul pods contained nicotine, or if they did, how much nicotine it actually contained. And that's really important because a lot of young people just aren't aware. They're focused on the taste, the flavor, the social experience, and not aware that they're rapidly becoming dependent on nicotine as a substance.
Thomas, the settlement of $438.5 million sounds like a lot. Divided among 33 states, divide that over a 6 to 10 year period. What is that money going to be used for? Is it enough, you think, to be helpful?
I think certainly my understanding of Wisconsin law is that I'll talk about Wisconsin first, but my understanding is that money from settlements like this would generally be deposited in the state general fund, although could be some stipulations about how it's to be used in the final settlement agreement between the Wisconsin AG and Juul, which I think is being written over the next few weeks. It's hard to say why this amount was settled on, being on the outside looking in negotiations between the two parties. But certainly the Lung Association position is that all the money from the settlement in both Wisconsin and in other states should be used on vaping prevention and education programs to help further reduce vaping and tobacco use by kids. Given the source and context of the settlement, it would be the logical thing for the money to be used for.
And Thomas, you are with the Lung Association. What are your main concerns, or I guess let's flip it around. What are your main hopes for lung health for teens if we can turn the tide on vaping among them?
I mean, I think e-cigarettes are the most used tobacco product among middle and high school students right now. And I think just and like Dr. Jornby said, there's a really a crisis of nicotine addiction out there amongst youth, and we're seeing them becoming more and more addicted, and that's partly a result of Juul's Juul added the additional nicotine and also how the chemical composition of the products and how that was changed and how they actually developed a new way of nicotine of basically the way the nicotine was ingested that made it easier for it to become addicted and easier to smoke. So I think we would like the result to be that tobacco product use among youth is reduced to a minor public health problem.
And Dr. Jornby, I've talked to you in the past about smoking cessation. Do we know yet what works best for teens who are addicted to vaping? Do we have good tools in the toolkit to help them stop?
Yeah, well, to take that in a narrow sense, the honest answer would be no. At this point, still trying to come to grips with what's involved with vaping, we haven't had what would be considered the gold standard, randomized controlled trials of different treatments, which probably are going to need to be a combination of medication and behavioral approaches to help anyone, but particularly young adults, stop vaping. Those studies have not yet been done. At the same time, we know that what's most difficult when people are trying to quit vaping, as is the case with cigarettes, are the symptoms of nicotine withdrawal and the craving, the urges that people have to get that next dose, the dependence that nicotine creates when people use it regularly. And we do know that we've got a range of medicines and we've got some proven behavioral techniques that, while they're not perfect, they increase people's chances of quitting by 2 to 3 times over just trying to tough it out cold turkey. So those kind of would be the go-tos for anyone who's thinking about quitting vaping but hasn't been able to do it just by putting down the vape device.
We're talking to Dr. Douglas Jornby, Director of Clinical Services at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, and Thomas Carr, Director of National Policy at the American Lung Association. They're with us today to talk about a more than $400 million settlement with e-cigarette company Juul over their marketing to teens and the health impacts of vaping, especially among young people. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've tried vaping, what did it do for you? Did you come into vaping from not smoking anything at all? Or did you go from smoking cigarettes to e-cigarettes? What questions do you have about vaping, about the marketing surrounding it? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Dr. Douglas Jornby, Director of Clinical Services for UW's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, and with Thomas Carr, Director of National Policy at the American Lung Association. They're with us to talk about the teen vaping crisis and a new settlement in the lawsuit against e-cigarette company Juul over their marketing, especially toward teens. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use e-cigarettes now? Have you in the past? What got you started? Was it your first foray into nicotine, or did you try it as a way to stop smoking traditional cigarettes? Do you have questions about e-cigarettes, how they're marketed, what they do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Sue is with us in Madison. Sue, hello.
Hi. I was calling because my son, who is 30, is very addicted, and he got addicted as a teenager. And I'm wondering if there's going to be any help for him through these monies that have been freed up.
Sue, thanks for sharing your son's story. Thomas, as you said, it might be different from state to state and how we do it. Are you hopeful that some of the settlement money will go to help people like Sue's son quit?
Certainly. I think that's a very legitimate use of the money. It is part of some of the programs that I was talking about, too. Trying to prevent youth from starting in the first place, but also on services to help existing e-cigarette users quit.
Sue, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Jornby, do we still have that the tobacco quit line here in Wisconsin? I know I've talked to you about that a zillion times in the past.
No, but it's good that you do, Rob, because every time we say it, somebody else will hear about it. And my hope would be that's something that Sue's son can take, you know, make use of too, because yeah, that is a service that's available at no cost to anyone here in the state of Wisconsin. It provides individual counseling over the phone or via text. It provides over-the-counter medication, nicotine patches, gum or lozenge for 2 weeks for folks who are ready to quit, make a quit attempt. And they also have specific materials oriented around vaping as well as traditional cigarette smoking too. So my hope is if he is interested, that's something he could use to support him in making a quit attempt.
That number is 800-QUIT-NOW. I just looked it up. You can do what I did and search for Wisconsin Quit Line. Again, 800-QUIT-NOW. If you want to join the conversation about vaping, that 800 number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Thomas, I know a big part of the story early on was in flavors, flavors often seen as marketed towards kids, candy flavored vaping and that sort of thing. What have we seen develop with that over the years?
Well, I mean, Juul was actually sold in a number of flavors prior to, so when it first got started in 2017, and that was certainly a big driver of the youth vaping epidemic, and in addition to some of the product features and other things like that. And then once there was some public outcry, and Juul now sells their products only in menthol and tobacco flavored. And what we're seeing is actually a move away from Juul among kids, and kind of they're sort of dropping to the sidelines, if you will. And then there's we're seeing kind of a move away from pre-filled cartridge type e-cigarettes like Juul and towards single-use disposable e-cigarettes like the company Puff Bar, which is now the number one e-cigarette product used by kids. And the one common denominator is certainly flavors in that. And the single-use disposable variety is coming in a wider variety of flavors. And part of that's due to basically Puff Bar and a number of other companies are claiming that they use nicotine derived from a source other than tobacco in their products. And most often in the form of a synthetic nicotine, which is derived in a lab. And until recently, this was outside of the jurisdiction of FDA Center for Tobacco Products. I think we may talk more about FDA oversight on these products later, but the products have been using this loophole to evade all regulations that are placed on tobacco products that contain nicotine derived from tobacco.
Yeah, Thomas, can you remind us what were some of the regulations that changed? The FDA really did step in a big way with regulation of e-cigarette products.
Yeah, under a law passed in 2009, FDA has comprehensive authority over the manufacture, marketing, and sales of tobacco products. The authority initially only covered cigarettes, smokeless, and roll-your-own tobacco, but was expanded by FDA to include e-cigarettes and most other tobacco products in 2016. Unfortunately, FDA due to some self-imposed delays in implementing parts of that of their authority over e-cigarettes, they've actually largely been sitting on the sidelines as Juul and now other e-cigarettes were targeted towards our kids. FDA is now conducting a review of all e-cigarettes, including Juul, to determine if they should remain in the market. It's a process that is supposed to occur before a new tobacco product actually enters the marketplace, actually. So a little delayed. Juul's tobacco and menthol flavored products are part of this review, and they remain under review by FDA right now. But given Juul's role in the youth vaping epidemic, the Lung Association thinks FDA should remove all their products from the market.
Dr. Jornby, I want to talk about research into vaping. It seems like it's been here a long time, but I remember it wasn't that many years ago I saw my first e-cigarette in the studio I'm standing in now. A guest kept ducking under the console. And a poof of vapor would come up, and it wasn't tobacco smoke. I finally figured out he was ducking under and vaping. So it's fairly new stuff. What do we need in the research? What do you want to know that we don't know about vaping right now?
That could easily fill up half an hour just in itself. But I'll hook it to something Mr. Carr was talking about a few moments ago, and that is there's an ongoing tension in addition to the fact that this is a constantly moving target and the loopholes that he mentioned that companies were exploiting, you know, the feds did step in and they banned tobacco and nicotine products for people under the age of 21, and they banned flavors. And yet we've got Puff Bar out there with synthetic nicotine, with, because it's not a cartridge, it's a disposable, it was going through the loophole on that. And it seems all very simple and straightforward to look at the egregious examples of companies marketing flavors, you know, based on sweet cereals and candies and things that really seemed aimed at young people. And they are. We know that's a really big factor in young folks starting to use them. But it also turns out that, you know, longtime smokers who might derive some benefit from using e-cigarettes as a way to quit combustible tobacco, and that's still a little bit up in the air in terms of whether that's reliable or not, but it appears that they also appreciate some of those different non-tobacco flavors. So steps that we take to protect young adults from starting in the first place, they may actually have some downside in potentially helping established smokers get cigarettes out of their lives. So it's not a simple thing, and we're trying to walk that line as fine as we can.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Jornby, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And Thomas, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having us.
I've been talking to Dr. Douglas Jornby, Director of Clinical Services for UW's Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, also a clinical psychologist, and professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine. And Thomas Carr was with us, Director of National Policy at the American Lung Association. We were talking about vaping, especially among teens, with this new settlement for a lot of states, including Wisconsin, from the e-cigarette company Juul, after a two-year-long investigation of their marketing toward teens. Still time for you to share your vaping story. What got you started if you vaped? What stopped you if you've stopped? You can tell us about it over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can always email ideas@wpr.org.